Cell phones, iPods, laptops, tablets, Hulu, Netflix, what have our lives become? Is there no escape from all the high tech? This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today we explore an effort by the Tri-State Tourism Council to promote technology-free getaways in eastern Iowa, southwest Wisconsin, and northwest Illinois. I'll talk with Dave Decker of the council, who's leading the effort, and with Tri-State business owners about their unplugged experiences. Then in the second half hour, Thomas Cooper, author of Fast Media, Media Fast. He'll tell us how to reclaim our lives and families from media oversaturation. That's all coming up. First, this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Cell phones, iPods, laptops, tablets, Facebook, Twitter. What have our lives become? How often have you considered how much of your day is spent dealing with high technology? And have you ever asked yourself, is there no escape from all this media? Have you ever wanted to just chuck it, disconnect, unplug, and relax, at least for a few days? Well, today we explore an effort by the Tri-State Tourism Council to promote technology-free getaways in eastern Iowa, southwest Wisconsin, and northwest Illinois. In the second half of our program, we'll be talking with Thomas Cooper, author of Fast Media, Media Fast. He'll tell us how to reclaim our lives and families from this media oversaturation. We want you to join us, listeners, this hour. Have you ever tried to unplug your life from high technology, go on a media diet, put the cell phone away, turn it off for longer than a few hours? What was it like? What did you discover? Or where do you like to go when you try to unplug from high tech media? 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. And yes, I know it's ironic that I'm giving out all that contact information when we're talking about chucking the high tech. Joining us, first of all, Dave Decker, Executive Director of the Tri-State Tourism Council. It covers eastern Iowa, parts of northwest Illinois, and southwest Wisconsin. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Ben. How are you today?
Now, I understand that you have an enviable view before you. You're at Chestnut Mountain.
I am. I felt to get in the mode that I should be looking at the Mississippi River, since this is River to River that we're on. And as an ex-Iowa boy, I'm always better when I can be looking at the Iowa Bluff. So I am very happy to be sitting here staring at the beautiful Mississippi River right now. It's great.
Making us, all those of us sitting in our cubicles, all very envious of you. But nevertheless, we'll go ahead with having you please describe the tech-free getaways that you're promoting. Tell us about this.
The idea started very simply, Ben. I mean, I think that I've had experiences that many families have. We were at a Christmas, and a number of the children, if they're not opening gifts, they're on some kind of electronic device, not paying attention to the others. And I'm like, my gosh, you know, we're only together 4 or 5 times a year for 3 hours. And so the following weekend was our Christmas on my side of the family, and we always play games, stocking stuffer games. And I said, you know, I'm going to take everybody's cell phone, and every hour that you stick in with this, I'm going to give everybody an Iowa Lottery ticket, because we're having our Christmas in Marion this year. So it was just one of those personal things. Shortly thereafter, I'm passing through the living room. I've got the Today Show on. Here you go, another gadget, of course. But I'm listening to the Today Show, and they're talking about unplugged getaways. And it's like down in Mexico where it's perfect 75-degree weather, or the Northwoods or Alaska. And I just thought to myself, boy, are we missing the boat. I hear so many of the people in the outlying areas that I represent, because of our beauty and our splendor in the Driftless region, we weren't hit by the glaciers. Mm-hmm. We've got these high peaks, these low valleys. Well, if you happen to be in a low valley, you may not have great broadband service. You may not have very good cell phone service. I hear people apologize for it. I'm thinking, maybe we need to put the spin on this to where we actually make a negative out of a positive and offer the unplugged getaways in our region. I do more research and find that some people are already doing it in some capacity, and it's being very well received. So our motto is to unplug to refresh. Mm-hmm. And we're looking to get people to come out here and just kind of leave it all behind.
Give us some specific examples of where people might go in the tri-state area that they could unplug and have this beautiful scenery to enjoy.
one of the things that we have been promoting for a long time with the Tri-State Tourism Council is birding. The Upper Mississippi River region has given us such beautiful scenery, such wonderful splendor, yet it also gives us the spring and fall migrations of waterfowl, eagles, and songbirds. So we've been promoting all of the that is birding in the region. So you can go to many of the bluffs, the vistas. Casper Bluff is very close to my home. We've got a lot of great places that you can go and view birds. So getting out and doing some birding would be a great alternative, taking in the scenery, mm-hmm. seeing the beautiful Mississippi River and the birds that come here. Also, we've been huge proponents of ecotourism, especially our friends in Southwest Wisconsin have done such a phenomenal job of creating great places to hike, bike, walk, fish from shore. You don't have to have, you know, the large boats to be out on the Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And we really promote those kind of destinations. And our area is littered with them. You know, we have the big hubs, Quad Cities, Dubuque, you know, a very well-known community like Galena, Prairie du Chien, Platteville, certainly. But you get outside of those areas, and I'm talking about everywhere else. Mm-hmm. Take it all in.
Mm-hmm. So to qualify as ecotourism, that's exactly what?
Ecotourism to us is hiking, biking, walking, birding, any of these outdoor activities that we can get where people enjoy just getting away, leaving the cell phone in the car. Now, certainly here, you know, I'm arguing with myself. If you're a birder, in some capacity, virtually every birder is a photographer. We're not asking you to not take your camera with you. And by no means are we saying if you get some great shots, to not share them with your friends ultimately on Facebook. But it's just getting away from what you do every other day of the week. Mm-hmm. And I really think that's what vacationing and ecotourism is about. You know, I live in Des Moines, Iowa. I live in Marion, Iowa. And I'm doing what I do 5 days a week. Well, this weekend, I want to do the opposite. And we really offer that to the visitor.
You know, Dave, our lives have changed so drastically just in the matter of a couple generations here. I'm wondering if you have experienced meeting people where even if they're not what we call digital natives, that they find it hard to imagine to exist without the technology, without their social media, without their TV, without their iPhone or whatever.
I see people all the time. You know, I bring this topic up and, you know, most people could give you one. You know, I could do without television, or I can unplug my cell phone at night, or I can, you know, stay off of Facebook for a day. But to totally walk away from it all, I think would be quite challenging for all of us. And myself personally, I mean, I must be candid with you that I am a habitual television watcher. I don't even watch it all the time, but when I walk into the living room, I click that thing on. Right. I may leave the room and not be back for an hour, but that doggone TV runs. And so I myself have my challenges, and like Mr. Cooper's going to talk about later, I definitely need a diet. That one subject I really need to address myself. So I see it all the time that people will tell me, you know, I could do without this or I could do without that. But to totally decompress and get rid of all of it, I do think would be a challenge for a lot of us.
Dave Decker is with us, Executive Director of the Tri-State Tourism Council, and they're promoting tech-free getaways in the tri-state area. Joining us now, Bill Barrick. He's a co-owner of the Inn at Irish Hollow. That's a bed and breakfast in the tri-state area in Galena, Illinois. And Bill Barrick, welcome to our program.
Well, thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I understand you offer unplugged getaways. Tell us about them.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, it's really exciting to hear that what we decided to do as a very conscious decision 22 years ago when we opened the inn is now fashionable, and it's very exciting for us to hear Dave talk about it and to promote it. We, when we opened the property, we determined that we just, no matter how much pressure there was to include televisions and landline phones, we decided not to. Our emphasis is to provide people an environment by which they can get away from what they do every day and maybe get to themselves, to reconnect with one another, to reconnect with nature. So we believe that we provide a great infrastructure to do that. I personally don't watch television. I gave it up about 15 years ago, and I understand the propensity because I would walk into a room and turn it on, and there it would stay. And I consciously decided that I really had other things that I wanted to do, and so we offer people the opportunity to at least try that while they're here. we do kind of a symbolic thing where we offer people the opportunity, a docking station for their technology when they arrive. We certainly don't insist upon it because a lot of people feel more comfortable if they can check in on the kids or if they can check their email once a day. However, a lot of people find it thrilling to actually relinquish a piece of technology.
Right.
We do offer Wi-Fi on the property, and we offer people the opportunity as well to get away from the real world and come here and do their work, which is kind of a different spin on that. But there's no television, there's no telephone in the room, so you have to really make a conscious effort to find technology in order to participate in it.
Bill Barrick, I understand you mentioned this was a decision 20 years ago, so we're in the early 1990s.
Yeah, we opened in the year 1990.
Mm-hmm. Now that you're ahead of the curve, so we're at the beginning of the digital age at that time. The reason you could was disconnecting at that time, or just more peace and quiet?
Well, you know, I think it was about the more peace and quiet and offering people that other alternative. I personally, when I check into some lodging establishment, I want to light a fire. You know, we offer wood-burning fireplaces. I want to take a hike. We have miles and miles. Our property, we started with 3/4 acre of land, and we realized that in order to afford people the opportunity to participate in nature, we expanded. We now are at 500 acres, so we have working farms. We have trails, hills, bridges, railroad mm-hmm. tunnels, wildflower fields, and we provide the tools by which they may enjoy that in a different way. I know Dave just mentioned birding, and so every room in every cottage has a set of binoculars. Every room in every cottage has two pair of snowshoes, his and her bikes, that sort of thing. So, you know, if you want to come here and really get the essence of what this beautiful unglaciated area is about, you know, we make it easy for you. We build you a campfire in the woods, and we'll bring dinner for you, and we call it our campfire picnic under the stars, where we will bring you dinner in the middle of the forest, and, you know, you just spend the evening there, and we'll come and clean up after you. And
Sounds marvelous. Bill, I imagine having been doing this for a couple of decades now, you must have a more than a few stories about people who came, didn't quite know what they were getting themselves into, didn't quite realize how dependent they had become on their high-tech gadgets, and had to swallow hard to and overcome some kind of hurdle to begin to enjoy themselves.
That is certainly the case. And usually it's one partner or the other that has a real struggle, and the other one is sort of grinning and you know, kicking their heels up and down that they were afforded the opportunity to do that for a weekend or a couple of days' stay. But yes, we certainly have had people challenged by that. And early on, I think there were more people that found it quite unexpected and were much more reticent to it. Now we promote it very heavily, you know, right on the front page of irishhollow.com, which is our website. It says Unplug Getaways. You know, it's giving people the idea that, you know, this is what we're offering. And we're not right for everybody. I'll assure you, we are absolutely wrong for many people. But we may be right for more people than realize that we're right for them, because they come here, they go through the lumps and bumps of a couple of days without television, and then they make reservations to come back 3 times the following year. So
you mentioned couples. I imagine this might be, you know, we all have hectic lives with families. If you can get away from maybe even get away from the kids and the couples, I imagine there are stories there of reconnecting without all the busyness of our everyday lives.
Right, and all of our spaces at Irish Hollow specifically are designed just for two people. So you really are, it's about reconnecting with that someone special to kind of get to know yourself and each other. Again, our slogan is an intimate hideaway, which, you know, expresses that we're really about the two of you being here together. And maybe that having no television and actually having to just sit together and read or chat, we do a... With every package, it includes a 7-course candlelight dinner with complimentary wine, and it's about a 3-hour experience, and a lot of people are not used to having those. You know, when I grew up, we had dinner every night, but now a lot of people, you know, they grab something on the run, and they
right.
talk to each other on their cell phones on the way home from work while they're eating fast food with the other hand.
Well, can you give us an idea, will this work over a weekend or a 3-day weekend? Can you give us an idea of what kind of tab we're going to be paying?
Actually, we have 2 and 3 night packages that we offer all week long. A 2 night package for 2 people would start at $4.95, and that would include both evenings, a full country gourmet breakfast each of the mornings, and we do offer the option of having that delivered to your room, as well as a 7-course candlelight dinner, or the option of a campfire picnic. So it's all inclusive, and the rate would range for a 2-night stay up to around $800 if it's one of the premier cottages with all the bells and whistles. So there's a range there. And like I mentioned, I know I kind of plugged the website, but if someone were to go on there, they can see all the different spaces, all the different rates, the time of year, what packages are offered. In the fall, we throw in things like a horse-drawn buggy ride for 2, or we take you around the property in a little horse-drawn carriage for 2. And so seasonally, the packages change somewhat, and the prices change slightly accordingly.
Okay, horse-drawn carriage with no Wi-Fi, I'm assuming. Bill Barrick, stay with us. Bill Barrick of the Inn at Irish Hollow outside of Galena, Illinois. Steve Tebbe is with us as well. He's the owner of Whispering Meadows Resort in Sprague-ville, Iowa. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Ben. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing well. Remind us where Sprague-ville is.
It's just due west of Preston, if you know where Preston, Iowa would be. Mm-hmm. South, about 10 miles south of Bellevue.
Okay. Now, you offer a getaway, tech-free getaway. What does it look like where you are?
Well, what we have is 3 cabins on 200 acres, and we have 1 cabin that sleeps 2 people, another cabin that sleeps up to 14 people, and another cabin that sleeps up to 10. And we pretty much kind of zero in on the family reunion thing. We have the 200 acres, so there's a lot of room to run around in, and we also have fishing and hiking and birding. It's down to a deep valley, and we found out about this unplugged thing a little bit by default, actually. We went ahead and we started opening up business, and this is like 13 years ago. Cell phones were basically just coming on steam at that time, and the guests were coming, and they'd say, can't get no cell phone service, you know. So we would kind of like, well, okay, we don't know what we're going to do about that. You may have to drive up to the hill if you really have an emergency or whatever. They would come and stay for a 3 or 4 or 5 day duration. By the end of that, they would have the cell phone laying in their luggage just due to the fact that they couldn't get out, so they just threw it in there. And the response we would get is that, you know, we really, really had a fun time because we could really connect with our family. That was the neatest thing. It's kind of one of those things that kind of sends chills up and down your spine when you do have a business like that.
And then how is business? How many people do you have come specifically to get unplugged?
Oh, I would say probably, I don't know anything specifically to that. I think they get unplugged by default. I really don't go ahead and grab their cell phones. This is kind of one of those technologies that I really basically learned about just as of like 2 weeks ago. And I really think it's going to be something that's really going to drive this thing. I never really thought a whole lot about it until Dave was talking, you know, to me about it. And he had made the comment, you know, how important this is going to be. And I'll never forget the time about, this must have been 5 or 7 years ago, this one young lad, he was probably 10 years old, and he had a cell phone. And he couldn't get out down there. He wanted to talk to his friends or whatever. And finally the mother says, you know, okay, Junior, just go ahead and just take the phone and put it in the luggage, you know. And he kind of stomped away. I happened to be down there at the time when he put it in there. I really felt kind of bad about it, you know, at the time. And then they went and did a bunch of fishing and hiking and birding and things like that. And the mother came up to me and says, you know, that was the best time that lad has ever had on vacation.
Really? That's marvelous that young people haven't changed. It's our technology environment that has changed. Dave Decker, you're still with us, I hope. We are ratcheting up all of the media that we're surrounding ourselves with. Do you think that if we could see that on a graph and that goes up, that the need to unplug will go up as well to follow that?
I agree absolutely. I think it's going to run very parallel to the increase in
technology, so are the visits of wanting to get away from it all. Bill and Steve both touched upon reconnection with the family and reconnecting with that partner, and I think it is imperative that we need to do this. We need to get that time away and just leave the week's work behind and get away and enjoy time together.
Mm-hmm. Is it your hope that in a few years through the Tri-State Tourism Council that the tri-state area will be an area, say, oh, that's where you go. That's where you go when you want to drop all the gadgets, get away from it all, reconnect with your family, your friends.
Yeah, I would love to think that. And your interview today, as was the interview on NPR earlier in the week, have really catapulted us. Yesterday at the Governor's Council on Tourism in the state of Wisconsin, they're very passionate about a travel green initiative where they're asking tourist destinations to become a green property. And recently, the Platteville Chamber of Commerce and Welcome Center 2 weeks ago was given that award. At the meeting yesterday, they were talking about the Unplugged initiative, working in tandem with that because they are one and for all intensive purposes. So it has really gained some great steam over the last couple of weeks. And I do feel that there's going to come a point. Everybody becomes known for something. And if by default, I don't think anybody on the phones today cares what it is, as long as we do become known for something that's in this positive light. So I really hope that if it doesn't and it's something else, so be it. But it would be wonderful.
I wonder, Dave, and then perhaps Bill and Steve, you can also add if you feel the need to on this. When we do have a getaway, 2-3 days, maybe we're lucky enough to have a week of a getaway, we disconnect ourselves, reconnect with flesh and blood people we are with at one of these areas. What is the benefit when we return to the working world of having done this? Any thoughts on that, Dave?
I do. I know that there's some employers that mandate to their employees, you are taking a lunch and you are taking that 15-minute break. Everybody that gets a little bit of fresh air during that workspace, as you had mentioned earlier about being in the cubicle, that next time period that you come back into the workspace, you are always more productive than you were when you left. You know, the day's dragging, boom, you get a little fresh air and you come back in and you're always reinvigorated. Now imagine doing that for 2 or 3 days and reinvigorating your mind and cleaning it out from what you've been carrying with you to the workplace and coming back that next day. It has to stimulate you in a much more positive fashion.
Mm-hmm. Bill Barrick, words to that?
Yeah, I do think likewise that when people are exposed to something, you know, like we're part of the farm-to-table movement, so this area is perfect for having that all-natural and that organic food product that people get to experience here, and the ecotourism opportunities and the agritourism, you know, getting to visit a working farm. I think those things have an impression that people take back, and they consciously or subconsciously are able to employ subtle changes in their lives. People come back, they, you know, they're asking us for recipes. They want to know where our food sources are coming from. Mm-hmm. I think they're doing things slightly differently because they've had that excerpt of time away from their reality and realize there are some alternative realities, and maybe they can employ a little bit of that into their regular lives or the moments that they had together of connection.
Okay, Bill Barrick, we have to say goodbye. We are plugged in, talking about being unplugged. Bill Barrick, co-owner of the Inn at Irish Hollow in Galena, Illinois. Steve Tebbe, thank you. Whispering Meadows Resort in Sprague, Iowa. And Dave Decker, executive director of the Tri-State Tourism Council. Thank you all for joining us this half hour. And wish you a nice unplugged experience the next time that comes. When we come back, we're continuing in on this theme of trying to unplug from technology, at least from time to time. We'll be joined by Thomas Cooper, author of Fast Media, Media Fast. He'll tell us how to reclaim our lives and families from media oversaturation when we continue on River to River after this short break. Great to have you with us over the noon hour on this edition of River to River. I'm Ben Kiefer, and asking you this hour to consider how much of your day, how much of your week is spent involved with high technology, with electronic media. If you've ever wondered if your thoughts are truly your own or your experiences are truly your own, not just recycled sound bites from the news, do you feel the experience of life firsthand? Or do you feel like maybe you're separated from life by this endless barrage of media, marketing messages, Do you feel like you're losing connections to other people by looking at a screen all day? Some of the questions we're asking this hour, some of the questions my next guest wants you to ask yourself. Thomas Cooper feels media overload is threatening our health and quality of life. His latest book is titled Fast Media, Media Fast, How to Clear Your Mind and Invigorate Your Life in an Age of Media Overload. Thomas Cooper is a professor of visual and media arts at Boston's Emerson College. Tom Cooper joins us by phone. Good afternoon, Tom.
Hi, Ben. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. In our first half hour, we were talking about getaways, techless, dropping the cell phone, the iPad, the tablet, whatever, getting away from all the technology, various places you can do that in our area. But before I get your take on that, I'd like you to describe. We experience it every day, but we might not know the degree of media saturation that we as modern people experience. Tell us about it.
Thanks. Nick Bolton in the New York Times pointed out just last year that media consumption has gone up 350% in the last 30 years in the United States. Children now consume 45 hours per week, and they only spend 17 hours with their parents and 30 in school. So it's the new educator in a leading role. Most of us as Americans now consume 3 years of television advertising in our lives. The prediction is it'll soon be four. That's just television advertising, not the programming and not the other media alone. All of this is steadily on the increase.
Mm. We want to reach out to our listeners this half hour to ask if you've ever tried to unplug your life from high technology. What was it like? Was it hard? What did you discover when you did leave the high-tech life behind to find something more simple, at least for a short time? And where did you go? Tell us about your experiences, your ideas on this as we discuss it this half hour. 1-866-780-9100 is our toll-free number. You can write us an email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook and on Twitter. Tweet us at IPR Talk. So we have this media saturation, Thomas Cooper, and it's increasing. No reason to believe that it's not going to continue to increase in the years to come. What are the consequences for us as individuals?
Well, we often lose perspective on our lives. If you think about thinking itself, I wake up saying I'm a teenage dream. That's a Katy Perry lyric, but clearly I'm neither one of those. So who's running my thinking? I ask my students, you know, how many of you have strong opinions about Obama? They all raise their hands. Or about bin Laden? They all raise their hands. Or Gaddafi or Lady Gaga? And then I say, how many of you have spent 8 hours with any of them off camera, unedited, without makeup? None of them raise their hands. So we live in an artificial, surreal world where we imagine we know things that we have no experience about. That's one consequence. Another is we're spending 40 times more money on the media than our grandparents. And that strongly influences the economy, the household. Our environmental waste is 10% media-driven. Look at a newspaper. It's a small forest every time it's published, or a magazine. Every computer is quickly obsolete, et cetera, et cetera. That has enormous consequences on the environment. So when you take a media fast or a media diet in a sensible way, I'm not suggesting that people should arbitrarily go from one extreme to the other, but just as when you take a food diet, you're conscious of making your body more healthy. When you take a media diet, if it's done the right way, you make your brain more healthy and you make your relationships more healthy. Divorce lawyers tell us more and more people say that when someone is in divorce court, well, he was always on sports, or she was always on Facebook, or they always had a handheld and I couldn't get a word in edgewise, or he was always on porn, or she was always on soap operas, whatever it might be, that the value of interpersonal relations becomes secondary to machines. For the first time 2 years ago, we had more people spending more time with machines than with other humans. These are all important consequences to study, and I think in some cases to reverse.
Mm-hmm. We talked about in the first half hour how technology getaways are being marketed here in Iowa, in this area. Do you see that as a growing area of tourism, to have certain locales, certain scenically beautiful areas? It would help to have that, where people say, you know, that's where we go when we disconnect and reconnect with one another.
Absolutely. One of your associates there, Alex, sent me a good article about people who are having that experience in the tri-state area there. And at the end, it talked about children who were milking cows or seeing chickens for the first time or whatever. We now have data to suggest half of our children haven't spent time in the wilderness just at all, in the woods, wouldn't know what to do, where to go, how to have fun, and so forth. So when you become technology free, it opens up a number of opportunities for you. There may be things you need to do in your life. Perhaps you haven't gotten a good night's sleep in a long time. Perhaps you just need to let your body come back to perspective. When Thoreau went to Walden, it was to get a perspective on his life, and we're often too sped up to do that. Other times it may be to bond more deeply or work out relationships with people that have been swept under the rug, issues, history, things that we don't want to look at, so we fill our lives with electricity instead. It can change the health of your body as well. I had one student lose 20 pounds on a media diet, not because he treated it as a weight loss program, but just because he got life. He suddenly realized how much more there was to do. So a weekend of that can be a good way to start the process, even a day, just to start thinking about, so what was my original purpose? Who am I under my programming? What would I really like to do? Who did I start out to be as a child? All those kind of questions get lost when you use the syrup of media to pour over the pancakes of life, so to speak.
I like that picture. Thomas Cooper, author of Fast Media, Media Fast. He is a professor of visual and media arts at Boston's Emerson College. River to River listeners, have you ever tried to unplug your life, go on a media diet? Tell us about it. What questions do you have about how to do it? Let's get to that. Experiences from River to River listeners, dial them in at 1-866-780-9100, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org, our email. Let's talk about, as you do in the book, how to prepare and go on that media fast. What do you do? What do you need to think about before you do it?
Thanks. Well, first of all, you realize media is not the enemy. For example, you're using media now in a very creative way to further open the mind and to get people to be real and think. So that's very valuable. It's not that you want to suddenly go from one extreme to the other, but rather to customize to your own needs what would be helpful for you. So you may choose a media diet, a practical media diet or a practical media fast. A fast is cutting out every guilty pleasure in the media you can think of, just as a food fast is allowing your body to cleanse and come back to balance. But many people find it sensible to have a media diet instead. Maybe Facebook is their addiction. Maybe music is their addiction, and they always wear headsets blocking out the people around them. Maybe their handheld is their addiction, so that people constantly tell them, hey, I'm trying to have a conversation with you, and you're looking down. So a diet might be a sensible way just to do what you do with the food diet, increase your carbs or cut down your fats or change to make sure you're balanced. And so, when you have a food diet, you try to be nutritionally balanced. Our cultural nutrition is usually imbalanced.
Well, what I'm hearing is you're saying it's much like going on a food diet, and we talk about in a food diet how we can, we all know we could get into this mindless eating. We are in the kitchen, we are in the house, we are somewhere, and the food is available, and that's why we eat. We don't really test, am I hungry? Do I need this? We are just eating mindlessly, and the same is true of media. We talked to a man the last half hour. He said, I don't even watch the TV. I just turn it on when I go into a room, and it stays on.
Right. That's what Dick Cavett said. People don't watch programs anymore. They watch television. Whatever they put on is, and it's in the background all the time. It's constantly going in our subconscious mind, even if we say we don't watch. So the question is, who are we? What would original thinking be like in this day? And wouldn't it be exciting and creative to have our own individual perspective? That's what America's supposed to be about, freedom. But every time you go into a mall, you're not free. You're purchasing twice as many things as you went in to get. It's all been pre-set up by advertising. So I would say it's extremely liberating to go on a diet or a fast if you're conscious of the changes you want to make and the way you'd like to be and what all the benefits can be. And it's a relief to your mind, the way that a food fast is a relief to your kidneys and your other organs that are overworked and overloaded.
Liberating, but you would not say that it doesn't happen without very possibly some withdrawal symptoms.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I want to be realistic, and it's not for everyone. Some people don't want to go through any kind of symptoms. They are kind of ruled by their guilty pleasures, just like some people don't want to give up smoking. They consider it the lesser of two evils than going through the withdrawal. So one understands that, but in the long term, after the withdrawal symptoms, it's just like when you go without food for a couple of days, you're really wanting, you're craving it again, and then suddenly you feel 10 pounds lighter and you're energized and you realize all your inner organs aren't having to do the extra work to process the chemicals and the overload and so forth. So it's quite analogous to the food process. And 3 or 4 days later, most people are thanking me who the first couple of days were kicking and screaming.
I know you've had your students take this media diet at Emerson College. Mm-hmm. Now, I imagine one of those chief withdrawal symptoms is you just feel bored. You don't know what to do with yourself, because every time you have felt the slightest little bit of boredom, there has been a technology fix close by. Is that right?
Yes. So what I ask people to do as part of the preparation is to think of all the things that they'd really like to do that they've never done. Maybe they wanted to take dance lessons. Maybe they wanted to go to Chinatown and sample the foods there. Maybe they wanted to hear inspirational lectures. Maybe they wanted to, you know, call Aunt Sarah who's dying of cancer, but they just kind of swept it under the rug. The pets, the plants, the other people in our lives may feel neglected. There are 101 creative things we can do. Volunteering is on the decline in America, and one of the reasons is the increased consumption. So what charity might we want to volunteer for, or what civic group needs our attention and our help as informed democratic citizens? All of those things, including just going for 2 days to nature to hear yourself think, or going on a boat trip or a camping trip, or maybe you have a spiritual or religious side that you've neglected, or an intellectual side, you're not thinking about what you want to. All the parts of you that are dormant, if you make a list of what you'd really like to do, take the kids to the zoo, or finally read such and such or whatever, you'd be surprised how people feel that's growth material and that's energizing, and they have so many things to do. Very different than boredom.
Mm-hmm. Can it change you as a person?
Can that change you?
Can that experience change you as a person? Yes.
Absolutely, because if there are things we're masking, are areas of us that feel neglected, are other people, other dimensions of experience, suddenly you're watering a seed that can then blossom into a flower. And so absolutely, I've had students and friends, and I've done this with seniors and other groups, who when they finally get a chance to leave an addiction behind, realize that that 8 hours a day that they were using before importing electricity is actually 8 hours that they could be creating or giving. I call it moving from the consumer to the creator. And so if you always wanted to draw or sculpt or create music or, for that matter, make positive media, there's nothing wrong with making media and creating media. It's simply consuming it mindlessly. All those are open doors for you again.
Mm-hmm. In your book, Fast Media, Media Fast, Thomas Cooper, you recount how you have stayed with Amish families, I believe in Pennsylvania in your case. We, of course, here in Iowa also have Amish communities. Yes. What did you learn there? Why did you go there? What did you learn about this area?
Thank you. First of all, although the Amish are very important, it was all groups that I could find that were abstaining from media that I went to live with to see how different it is. The no media groups and the low media groups as well, how different that is than ours. But just to give you an example, in an Amish community, I might go into a house and hear the family singing together. Or I might go into the house and hear silence and discover someone playing on the floor and someone else doing, you know, some kind of therapeutic hobby. Or finding them all having a conversation together as a family. Very different than, say, the typical suburban home I'd go into where maybe I hear MTV spilling out of one door, another door is closed because what the person's looking at, they don't want anybody else to know, two people arguing in a corner, and yet another door where you hear sports blaring out. So the media can ghettoize the family or can deconstruct community into isolated portals where individuals basically have their own little artificial world. And in an Amish-type community, despite the drawbacks, every community has drawbacks, you might actually find people harmonizing together literally but metaphorically in a number of different ways. I don't want to sugarcoat. Every community I've been in has a downside. For example, if there were a nuclear meltdown 3 miles away, from an Amish community and no one had radio or TV or whatever. They don't have cars to zip away and so forth. You know, that's really a dangerous situation. So there's an upside and a downside to no community, no media zones, low media zones, and certainly a downside to our heavily saturated media zones as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, for us, those our age, Thomas Cooper and older, we have a remembrance. We remember a time when we didn't have so many gadgets. We weren't so connected with the rest of the world through our digital age. But people younger than 25 have no memory of that and perhaps have never experienced it. Is that another case? Is that a harder case to look at and convince that there is a different way? Because if you've never experienced it, how can you trust that there is something on the other side, that you have another side of you?
That's an excellent question. And I find that the greater the degree of saturation and addiction, the harder it is to picture an antidote or to picture an alternative reality. But ironically and positively, the media itself often shows us doors that we'd like to go through that we usually don't, like a day in nature. We see all the time, you know, about animals and so forth, watching different kinds of programming. And we also see other countries we'd like to travel to and experience. So the media, ironically, presents a non-mediated and a low-mediated world to us in fantasies that many people would like to fulfill, such as an ideal relationship. Pretty hard to have one of those if you're always glued to the tube.
Mm-hmm.
So there are paradoxes there. But I think on the whole, people always sense there's something more. They may not know what it looks like or what it is, but deep inside, nobody wants to die with their music still in them. And so even if there's extreme media saturation, there's often an inner voice. For some, it's spiritual or religious. For others, it's philosophical. Others don't know how to name it, psychological or whatever it is, but something compelling us to say, I ought to be doing something else. And so this gives you a chance to see all the something else's that are out there.
You address in your book the media saturation that most of us experience, but you also write about media addiction in your book. How do I know the difference between a person who is saturated, middle of the road saturated in our society today, and someone who has a real problem, even by today's standards?
Right. Actually, there are media addiction centers now that exist in the medical world, in the real outer world. So this is not just a metaphor. And when you have an addiction, it means you can't take it or leave it. We have people who can't go to sleep because they're so glued to email, or who can't actually change the channel because for some reason they're riveted to it. We have all kinds of extremes. And this has been true of all media. When I was an undergraduate at Harvard, there were two guys in the class who took their books everywhere, read them walking back and forth to classes, and for that matter, television. Way back in the 70s, Lonnie Silver on NPR created a documentary about Television Anonymous, people who would be in a circle just like AA, but in Television Anonymous, they'd stand up and say, I started to go to sleep with my remote clicker last night at 10 o'clock. I was changing the channel. I was still changing the channels. It became midnight. It was still changing the channels. It was 3 a.m. in the morning, and I had to go to work to get up at 6:30, so I lost my job. So we've had all kinds of people who have had challenges with addiction. The difference between habituation and addiction, roughly speaking, is you cannot take it or leave it. If it's a habit, you realize it. You may not like it, but you know you can choose to do something else. An addiction is such that even though you know a divorce is coming, you still prefer the TV to your wife.
Mm. We've got about a minute or so left of our program. Take us into the future, at least a future that you have hoped for us in terms of how we deal with the media consumption. You say media are not the bad guy.
Absolutely.
What would be a healthy vision of the future you could spin out for us?
Well, constantly reinforcing the positive side of media, so therefore telling you, keep up the good work, Ben, with what you're doing. But I think the vision is a double edge. In the future, we're going to see a tremendous amount more of media saturation, but all cycles bounce back. So we have a lot more people now trying to leave their media behind, swearing off Facebook for a week, going on a digital diet for a weekend. And so the more saturation we'll have, the more we'll have the opposite extreme of people wanting to get away from it.
Okay, thank you very much, Thomas Cooper. His book is titled Fast Media, Media Fast, How to Clear Your Mind and Invigorate Your Life in an Age of Media Overload. Cooper is a professor of visual and media arts at Boston's Emerson College. Thank you very much, Thomas Cooper.
Ben, thank you.
And River to River is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan. Technical support from Dennis Reese. And the executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand audio of River to River available at our website. If you missed part of this program, want to hear the whole thing, we've got it all there at iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music is written and performed by the River Monks. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Coming up on Monday, we'll hear about the aftermath. 1 year after one of the deadliest tornadoes in U.S. history struck Joplin, Missouri, killing 160. Not too long ago, I was on a trip to Joplin to talk with survivors of that disaster. We'll hear from a couple who survived in their house. It was ripped away, and the closet they were in was the only part that stood after that tornado. Conversation with them, also a team of ISU researchers talking about the aftermath and the lessons learned. That's Monday on River to River. Hope you'll join us then.